Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca, Mesut Özil. Corner, llegó el gol de Olivier Giroud. Marca el Arsenal, marca Olivier Giroud. Gol de los Gunners.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunner Blogger Man. There you are.
Hello, here I am. How are you?
I'm okay. I clearly can't say Gunner Blog.
Well, you haven't done a podcast for a full 7 days. You know, you're out of practice.
Yeah, this is true. This is true.
Summer's taking its toll. You're on the beach, you know.
Literally.
I mean, are you actually? No,
no, I'm on a chair.
Similar. There are chairs on beaches sometimes.
Yeah? I don't like chairs on beaches. I prefer to lie down on the sand on a towel.
I was going to say, make sure you put a towel between you and said sand.
Yeah?
It would be quite uncomfortable after a while.
It would be.
But what's your issue with chairs? Do you feel like it's just, if you want to sit in a chair, there are loads of chairs, not on the beach. Why are you taking a chair all the way down to the beach?
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't bring a sofa, you wouldn't bring a chaise lounge, you wouldn't bring one of those to the beach.
No.
I do remember when I lived in Spain and people would come down to the beach, families would come down to the beach, let's say, on a Sunday, and they would bring literally furniture. Seriously, they would bring a table and fold-up chairs and an umbrella and they would, you know, camp. But set up camp on the beach at some point, and they'd all sit around and they'd eat food and eat sandwiches and go into the sea and stuff. But it seemed like an awful lot of hassle to me. I never wanted to bring furniture to the beach.
And so is it all fold up?
Yeah.
Fold up chairs, fold up table,
yeah.
Fold up bed, wardrobe.
Yeah, exactly.
Lampshade.
Exactly. It was all fold up. So, you know, there's a market there if climate change ever provides the UK and Ireland with real, you know, good weather all the time. That there's a market there for somebody to get in quickly to make foldable furniture that you can take to the beach. But apart from that, I'm fine. How are you? How was your weekend?
Very good. I was supposed to be in Marseille originally.
Oh!
I was planning to have been in Marseille this weekend, but events took a turn and I wasn't there. Maybe.
Banning order, was it?
Yeah, maybe for the best. I mean, to be fair, I can get in quite a lot of trouble in Hackney. It transpires, you know.
Yeah.
I can get held up at gunpoint wherever I go. So violence follows me around.
I'm just trying to think how bad it would have been. It was bad, obviously, what happened. But if you had been there, chances are somebody would have set off a thermonuclear device or something.
Well, somebody would have certainly perished, and it certainly would have been me. So, yes, that was all rather grim, wasn't it?
It was a bit. I remember you saying a couple of weeks ago that you were going over for a couple of games. So that was one of the ones you were going over for.
I was going to be there. I would be there right now. I'd be in Paris preparing to watch
Ireland
Sweden,
and Sweden.
Ireland.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's right.
But, and I was coming back tomorrow. However, other actual work, you know, intervened. So it wasn't to be the case. But I'll be honest, when I got that news, I was disappointed, as you would be, but I was also a little bit relieved. I did have a kind of strange premonition-y feeling that it might not be the most, well, I don't think you had to be a genius to figure out it might not be the most pleasant occasion.
Yeah.
But my concerns about the security were not necessarily those ones, do you know what I mean?
Right.
That was the sort of the thing about the whole incident in Marseille that I found most, I think I'd forgotten about what the danger football fans, well, probably not football fans, but people at football matches can be unto themselves.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of a dampener, wasn't it, on the Euro festivities?
Yeah, it was a bit. It's fucking just shit to see, to be perfectly honest, because it overshadows the football. And, you know, the vast majority of people are there to support their countries, to support their teams, to have a good time. And the reality of it is that, you know, most people can go to football and have a laugh and have a few drinks and not get involved in any kind of violence at all. But there are this minority of people that spoil it, or who are prepared, if things go a bit leery, to get involved themselves rather than just get the fuck away from it. But I mean, it's a bit of a throwback, isn't it? A bit of a shame that it's all gone down that way. I don't know if you read an article in the Irish Times. You probably haven't at this point, but I put it up on Twitter. An article by Ken Early from Second Captains.
I did read it. Yeah, it's very good.
It is excellent. So I'd recommend people to check that out. It's Ken Early, Russians Go to War with an English Myth. But basically, he's talking about how the English fans, not necessarily to blame for some of the stuff that's happened, behave in a way that sort of attracts trouble, and then you get the Russians coming in and really sparking it all off. It's a very good piece, and obviously he's in Marseille at the moment, or maybe he's on his way to Paris to watch Ireland. I'm not sure, but he's in Marseille and was caught up in it, so he's obviously looking at it from his own perspective. But yeah, a bit of a shame, and you know particularly what happened in the stadium then. I mean, that
was really shocking. I think the most troubling thing about that was that, you know, it was very obvious to people. There were tweets going around from journalists before the game saying, well, the cordon between the Russian fans and the English fan looks a bit flimsy, a bit insubstantial. There's not great stewarding. Mm. It was very obvious, I think, to everyone looking at it, that was going to be an issue. So it proved at full time. And I also think the fact that fans were able to get flare guns into the stadium,
that
is a real concern.
Yeah, that was a bit of a worry, wasn't it? Because whatever about it kicking off on the streets or in bars where people have been outside drinking all day, you know, which is a contributory factor, of course. Whatever about that, when somebody can take a flare gun into a stadium in the current climate, you know what I mean? You know, when I talk about that.
Of course, yeah.
After other things that we've seen this weekend that have been profoundly distressing and depressing and very upsetting when it comes to weapons and guns, that somebody could take a flare gun in. Because, you know, if you can take a flare gun in without any problem, you can take whatever else, whatever other kind of gun in you want, if you were so inclined. And as we saw at the Stade de France last year, was it last year or earlier this year?
I think earlier. I don't know. I'm sorry, that's terrible. I can't remember. Mm. I think maybe the end of last year.
Yeah, I think it might have been. But yeah, when you see what happened there. And
November last year. Yeah,
so people were intent on doing some damage and wreaking destruction and havoc inside a football stadium. To me, that was really, really worrying, that the security measures that they put in place. I mean, that they can't, you know, all we've heard about in the build-up to this tournament is security and the terror threat and the alerts and everything else. And one of the first games, somebody's able to bring in a flare gun and fire it from one side of the stadium to the other. I mean, what the fuck is going on there?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be interesting as well to see what sanctions UEFA takes. I mean, they've made a very strongly worded statement, but they've done that kind of thing before and not necessarily followed through on it. It's not as if a country like Russia, for example, are on their first warning here. So, yeah. I don't know. It'd be fascinating to see what kind of action they take. It's always a complicated one, though, isn't it, about how do you punish a football association or punish a team effectively for the conduct of its fans.
Yeah, it's very true. And then, you know, there's part of me as well that looks at the way that football is run by UEFA, by FIFA, by all these people in charge. And you wonder if the way that they behave is not in some way a factor in this as well. And I'm not trying to excuse violence or condone violence or anything like that, but you have to look at root causes of things. And I think when FIFA and UEFA and football associations and Premier Leagues and everything else, when they treat fans and broadcasters, the whole lot of it comes together, they treat fans in a way that begets poor behavior in certain ways. And again, I'm not condoning it, but you look at the way that the World Cup was awarded to Russia and its treatment of gay people, for example, that kind of thing. And you're telling people, football fans, that, oh, it's okay, you can go there and we can have a World Cup there, it's fine. And you look at Qatar and the human rights abuses there and people who are literally dying, essentially slaves dying to build football stadiums so we can have a World Cup in the winter because it's too hot to have it in the summer, because basically this country has paid for the World Cup to take place there. you know, what sort of a message are you sending to people that the game is utterly corrupt, and that the behavior of certain people who associate themselves with the game is going to be reflected in that too? I just, you know, I just think it's all part of a bigger thing, you know.
I think that's fair. I mean, you know, people say justifiably and understandably that these people involved in the violence out in France are an embarrassment to football.
Yeah.
But I also think that some of these bodies and organisations are as well.
Yeah.
And I don't think what's happening in Marseille, for example, should deflect from that. I think that, you know, awarding the World Cup to Russia or to Qatar obviously was a grave mistake and something that is going to have some repercussions. I mean, it's really sad, though. I'm literally on the BBC football website right now, and there's a story there on the top of the page, and it says, Euro 2016, tell us your stories from France. And instead of the picture of, you know, some fans celebrating or a great goal going in, it's a picture of a football fan with his head in his hands, with the streets strewn with violence around him. Let's hope by the end of the tournament those aren't the stories that are proliferating.
Yeah.
Have you been watching the football then?
I have been watching bits and pieces of it. I didn't see any yesterday. I saw a little bit of the Croatia Turkey game, but I've been watching bits and pieces of it over the weekend. I saw the opening game, France against Romania, won some money on Olivier Giroud.
Olivier Giroud did you a favour.
He certainly did. And in the pub on Friday night, we had like a €2. Everyone went in on first goal scorer. Who's, you know, everyone put €2 on the table. And I picked Giroud again. So not only did I win money from the bookies, I ended up with about €16 from all the chaps I was out in the pub with. So that was good. Thank you, Olivier Giroud. You are a true hero.
Very nice. I've actually backed him to win the golden boot in the tournament.
Do you know what? So have I.
Yeah.
I think I don't know.
Is it crazy? Are we crazy?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. It just strikes me as a typically Giroud thing to do, though.
Yeah.
You know, win the, or be the most, or score the most goals at the tournament and still have people go, is he any good? Is he any good? You know, it just struck me as that would be a typically Giroud thing. Actually, I don't know. I think I have Giroud to, this is my long bet, Germany to win and Olivier Giroud as top goal scorer, odds of 81-1.
Not bad.
Yeah.
I think I've got Giroud to win and France to win.
Right. What did you get on that?
I'm quite good. I think about 100, I don't know. I can't remember.
Fair enough.
I know I stand to win over 100 quid, and I put only a couple of quid on it, so it was obviously a good bet.
Right.
But I've been saying France for 2 years, so they'll make me look a fool. I'll have a prediction wrong. Can you believe it? Me, of all people.
I know. This would be unprecedented, basically.
Yeah. it would break the internet. But yeah, obviously, I mean, if he wins the golden boot of the competition, perfect excuse as well for Arsene Wenger to not buy a striker. Arsenal fans collectively probably excited and terrorised.
Well, you know what? I have seen that over the weekend. Some tweets and some Facebook comments of like, oh God, I like Giroud and it's great that he scored and I hope he does well, but what if by
not
scoring...
Too well.
Yeah, not too well. What if he does so well that Arsene Wenger says, I don't need a striker at all? Which, you know, I understand to a certain extent, but I think it's pretty much worst case scenario stuff, you know. I don't think that's going to change.
This summer, more than ever, I think numerically we need a striker. You know, with Welbeck being out, we literally need one in the squad. So
yeah,
we can rest assured that I think one will arrive at some point.
Sure. Okay. So then, obviously, in between all the violence, there was an England game.
An England game, which I watched from the comfort of my brother's flat. And England, did you watch it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe some sort of curious nationalism is stirring in me. But I thought England actually played quite well for England.
I thought they played really well in the first half.
Yeah,
in the first half they were excellent. And then Russia did something, like tried, I think it might have been.
They started trying or organising themselves. Yeah. It was something annoying and unfair.
Yeah.
And suddenly England didn't look quite as good.
No, they didn't.
The keeper made an unbelievable save, Akinfeev. I thought that was a brilliant save. I think they got slightly lost amidst the equaliser. But do you know what I mean? Where he tipped Rooney's shot onto the ball.
Yeah, that was actually brilliant. There was a brilliant, was shades of that Gordon Banks save from Pelé in the 1970 World Cup.
Because he got so low and tipped it so high.
Yeah. I thought Rooney should have still scored, though.
Probably.
From
probably
that position.
Should have done. And then, obviously, they got the equaliser. So, I mean, it was very typical. I mean, obviously, there are plenty of jokes going around, but if it looks like Spurs, it probably is Spurs, isn't it? That's the thing.
If it looks
five
like
Tottenham
a Spurs...
players in white. Yeah.
Looks like a Spurs, talks like a Spurs, it's a Spurs. Yeah, I mean, look, I thought the free kick, I was looking at it going, Eric Dier taking a free kick? Like, I still don't quite get what Eric Dier is or what he does or why he is.
No, he's a curious footballer and one I hadn't seen loads of, so... But I actually thought he played quite well on that. It was a great free kick. According to Opta, I think it's Opta Jose, he hasn't taken a direct free kick in his two seasons of Premier League football.
So what was... I mean, hang on a second. So here, let me just see if I can make some sense of this. A man who's never taken a free kick in his professional career, or at least two seasons in the Premier League. Mm. England have a free kick. And obviously it was justified because he scored it, even though I think the keeper was a bit dodgy. But... here we are. England have a free kick outside the box. Wayne Rooney is there. He's a guy who normally takes free kicks. Harry Kane.
He loves taking set pieces, pointlessly.
Harry Kane apparently is so good at taking set pieces that England's main striker is out taking corners on which you would like your main striker to be on the end of, right? That's, you know, that's the ideal situation. Maybe Harry Kane is just a really rubbish headerer of the ball, although he did score a header against us, didn't he? The big fucking open mouth bastard.
He did.
Big loopy one last year.
Sorry to be Mr. Stats again, but I think he's only scored one header from a corner last season. However, that doesn't mean he can't head the ball.
Right. Okay. I don't quite get why it is that he's taking the corners.
No,
I don't understand.
I wouldn't have that the case either.
Yeah. So why then, if he's so good at taking set pieces, if he's the man who's got the delivery, if he's the guy who can hit the ball sweetly every time, because that's what you want from your set-piece taker. You want consistency, you want accuracy, you want power, you want all these things that Harry Kane is apparently so good at that he's taking corners. Why the hell didn't he take the free kick?
Great question. I mean, as an Englishman, I was glad he didn't. But, yeah, very strange. I think Dyer's sort of, you know, he's taken on a few long shots or... couple of free kicks where the ball's sort of been laid off to him and he's just put his foot through it. But that was quite a delicately placed strike, you know, the inside of his foot. Weird. No one knew he had that in his locker. But the keeper, yeah, could have done better. That seems to be a bit of a recurring theme in the tournament so far.
Yeah.
In previous years, we'd all be talking about the ball, wouldn't we? We'd be talking about, oh, what's going on with this ball?
Yeah,
the keepers have stopped using that excuse.
These crazy new low or whatever.
It's the roundest
ball
ever. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, there have been a few keeper mistakes. Like I thought the Modric's strike yesterday was very good. Like lovely hit when the ball fell to him. But keeper, come on. Come on. Get down. Just get down. I know it's one of those where they say it's really awkward because it bounced just in front of him. But that's your whole fucking job, guy. It's your whole job. The ball bounces in front of you and you stop it. You know, you've trained your entire
balls
life.
Balls bounce.
Yeah.
That's day one of goalkeeping school.
Yeah.
Balls bounce.
They don't just land and go...
It was a good goal, that. It was right out of the Matthew Flamini textbook, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. He's obviously been watching Flamini for quite some time. Yeah.
Studying him. His idol.
Yeah. Top Real Madrid midfielder studies Flamini to score European Championships goal. But yeah. And then, okay, so back to England.
Back to England, yeah.
All right, I had a treble on that day. I had Switzerland to win.
Yeah.
1-0, that was good. I came in just at the end of the Switzerland game and this Albanian guy has gone clean through on goal. And I'm going, for fuck's sake, Jesus, I'm going to lose here. And the keeper made a brilliant save.
He did. It was one of those where the player didn't really believe he was onside, I think, as well.
Yeah. Play the whistle, guy.
Yeah.
And then Wales against Wales again. Who did Wales play?
Slovakia,
that's what it was. So then there was 1-0 and I was thinking it was great. So I went off to buy some beer and I came back in. It was 1-1. I was like, oh, God, maybe I'll cash out. And then Wales scored. So that was 2-1. So England then score. They're 1-0 up and they're offering me a cash out. And I took it. I had to take it.
You took it?
I took it, yeah, before Russia scored, yeah. So
well,
I won the money.
Fair play. Because I didn't see Russia scoring in that game, I have to be honest. They were rubbish for very long periods.
Yeah, I mean, even when they played a bit better in the second half, they didn't look terribly threatening, did they? They didn't look like a side that was going to trouble England too much. Joe Hart didn't have a lot to do. He could concentrate on his dandruff, counting his flakes.
That's right. You know? Exactly that. They had a very tall striker, and that was about it. And yeah, great goal. I mean, a really good header for the equaliser.
Yeah, one of those loopy ones that's going, it's going to either just bounce off the crossbar or just under and just under.
Perfect. So,
bit of a sickener, though.
Bit of a sickener for England, maybe. I mean, especially with Wales winning. Makes the group very, very interesting.
Mm.
Good to see Aaron Ramsey as well, sporting his new haircut that you care so much about.
Yep.
He got a sort of an assist by falling over. Did you catch that?
I did, yeah. It was good. Well, it was a nice bit of play.
It was. I think he was looking for a foul, and he sort of played the ball to the side of the defender and stumbled, and then tucked away by son of Brian Robson and Kanu.
Yeah.
good to see him on the score sheet.
Glad it was Brian Robson, not Robson from Robson and Jerome.
No, that's true. There were a few Robsons in contention.
Which one of them is in Game of Thrones? Is it Robson or Jerome?
I don't know. Are they like Anton Deck, where they always stand one on a certain side of the screen?
I don't know.
If you look at Anton Deck, they're always the same, left to right.
Are they?
Yeah, Ant's always on the left.
Right.
They read, like, you know, westernised books, left to right.
Right.
Helpful tip there. Yeah. I don't know if it's the same with Robson and Jerome.
Okay. I'm just looking.
We'll have to keep an eye out.
It's Jerome who's in Game of Thrones. He's Bronn. Is it Bronn? I think in Game of Thrones. Yeah, yeah.
Don't know what Robson's up to. I think he's presenting travel programs.
Really?
But I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
Actually, I've got him here because I just looked up. Currently, he plays Detective Inspector Geordie Keating on ITV's Grantchester.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Grantchester just sounds like a man's name.
Yeah. It sounds like a made up football team from Dream Team or something, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Grantchester United.
Grantchester Rovers or whatever, yeah.
And what else happened? Oh, Shaka. I saw Granite Xhaka play a match of football.
I didn't see any of it.
So you aren't able to reach a complete conclusion on him yet?
No, I'm not.
Those who did see him play.
Yeah, absolutely. One guy tweeted me at halftime going, this guy looks terrible, like another Wenger dud. Get rid of him. What a load of ball. You know, you're going, mate, it's 45 minutes of an international game when he's not even playing for us. And basically, you're the only person saying that he's no good. Everyone else is going, oh, I like this.
Did you see his tackle in the first 5 minutes?
Yeah, I think I saw a clip of that, all right, yeah.
He, like Luka Modric, has been watching Matthew Flamini. Absolutely steamed into this bloke.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, big day for him. His brother was on the other team. Can you imagine how riled up that would get you? That would be a big game.
It'd be great. It'd be fantastic. I always enjoy playing against my brother in five-a-side.
Yeah, really fun.
Mm.
But I was really impressed with him, actually. And a couple of other people I know were too. I thought he was good. He showed a good range of passing. Very sort of authoritative presence.
That's good.
We don't want to go too far the other way. You know, if you can't write him off after one game, let's not make him a star after one game either. But
you liked what you saw. You're making a judgment on the 90 minutes. You're not saying that he's going to be, you know, the next whatever. Just he looked good in 90 minutes. That's all right.
That's
you can say that. We don't have to justify that.
Okay, good. Well, yeah. that's kind of you. No, I did, and I thought he showed things that we sort of know already. A willingness to come and pick the ball up off the back four.
Mm.
A tendency to look for perhaps longer passes than we're used to seeing from deep midfield positions. You know, trying to pick out the wingers in behind the fullback early. And I think, yeah, that's going to bring something different and something interesting to our midfield.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Mesut Ozil, did you watch Germany last night? I didn't see it, but I did see his assist.
Bits and bobs. There was an assist in there. I saw a nice screen grab. Someone said of Arsenal Twitter, basically of Arsenal fans on Twitter, when Germany scored. Obviously, Schweinsteiger got the goal, but it was just like person after person after person just tweeting, Ozil assist. We've really taken to celebrating those moments, but it was a great pass. Yeah, yeah. What you would expect, I guess, from him.
Sure. So anything else stick out in the tournament?
I'm just trying to think. Is there any games we've overlooked? Wojciech Szczesny played, didn't he? He's technically an Arsenal man.
He did, yeah. Clean sheet against Northern Ireland, yeah.
Turkey, Croatia. Wasn't much Arsenal interest there. I think we've sort of mainly covered it off.
Yeah. All right.
I can't really think of anything else. It's been a good start to the tournament, though. Some good goals.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully now, you know, as it progresses, the football will, you know, will dominate and there'll be no more of the nonsense, hopefully. And we can just talk about how good the football is. Today, of course, Spain, Hector Bellerin could be involved for Spain. Tomáš Rosický, Petr Cech for the Czech Republic.
Mm-hmm.
Ireland are playing Sweden, a game you should have been at.
I know. That'll be a really fascinating match, actually. How do you fancy Ireland's chances?
Look, I suppose, I don't know, really, to be honest. They're always capable of a result. I wouldn't necessarily be confident of a win, but I think they could get something from the game. So I have that as a draw today, Ireland versus Sweden.
I was listening to, I think it was Five Live, and they were talking about how certain teams just have, you know, one kind of Galactico player can make the difference for them. They were talking about Croatia, I think, and Modric, obviously, at Real Madrid. Then they mentioned Wales, Gareth Bale, obviously, the difference maker. And they were like, and have Ireland got that man? And the suggestion from the pundit was Shane Long.
So. Well, yeah, look, he's a profoundly irritating player to play against.
That's certainly true.
You know, I don't think Ireland have any real stars. That's for sure. But Shane Long, as we know, and we've seen it
at close
against
quarters.
Us. Yeah, you know, that there was the game against Southampton. I know everyone looks at it as, you know, one of the real dark moments of last season, which it was from a result point of view. But there was also a bit of luck went Southampton's way. If you remember, one of the goals, I think Long tripped Koscielny off the ball.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I don't know whether he scored that goal or set it up or something, but, you know, he's that kind of a player. So he's aggressive and he's strong. He's decent in the air. He's had a good season. I think he's had a good season. But apart from that, there isn't really anybody that is going to stand out and do something amazing.
But, you know, in international football, if you can form a cohesive team, that's sometimes the biggest challenge, you know, and that can be the most effective thing.
Yeah.
Guys, Greece won the Euros.
Yeah, this is very true.
Leicester won the league. Anything's possible.
You never know. And maybe Cyrus Christie will be the hero that Ireland never knew it needed.
It's the hero Ireland deserves.
Yes. All right, so that's the football. Oh, Belgium, Italy later on as well. So,
yeah, that'd be a good game.
Yeah, that'll be quite good. So look, we need to talk about it.
Oh, dear.
The elephant in the room.
Go on then.
Well, Jamie Vardy, right? Because this time last week we were talking about it as if it was a done deal.
Imminent.
Or going to be a done deal.
Certainly, yeah.
And that was the feeling. That's what everybody thought.
The mega jinx.
Yes, pretty much. What do you make of it? What do you make of where it stands right now? Has time and a week to think about the prospect of Jamie Vardy as an Arsenal? Has it changed your mind any? Has the fact that he delayed his decision? I mean, did you see what Thierry Henry said?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
He sort of said, why do you have to think about it? It was basically the gist of it, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was on BBC Five Live and he said something like, he's 29 and Arsenal is coming for you and you're telling me you have to think about it? You got this really high-pitched...
about as French as he's ever sounded, and yeah. Thierry's very French.
Yeah. So, what's your thinking right now?
I'm prepared to be quite patient about it because I kind of understand why it might not be going through straight away. I do think that, you know... I'm reminded of the situation, Tim Stillman mentioned it, about Olivier Giroud, which was that he was heavily linked with the club in May and June of, I think it was 2012, but didn't actually end up signing until France were eliminated from the tournament, right at the end of June or early July.
Mm.
And I do wonder if it might play out a similar way. Maybe I'm wrong and maybe he'll elect to stay with Leicester, but my gut still says that he will join Arsenal. I think there are two things contributing to that. One is the fact that we're still seeing Leicester players coming out, and Danny Simpson only yesterday was saying, you know, he hopes Vardy will stay. Nothing like, oh, I've had an indication that he will. And also, I suspect that if Arsenal felt they stood to be embarrassed, I suspect they would distance themselves more than they have.
Mm.
I suspect we'd see something come out saying Arsenal have ended their interest in Jamie Vardy.
Yeah.
They at least seem to believe it's worth you know, remaining in the hunt, as it were.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's a very difficult one, but I feel like there's a lot of guesswork that's gone on since the news of the bid broke. You know, a lot of sort of artificial deadlines have been set by the media and have been and gone. And it's clear that we haven't ended our interest. So, I don't know. It's still in the balance, I guess. But I'm actually relatively optimistic it will happen. What about you? What's your feeling about the whole thing? Do you think it's a bit of a joke? You should have just done the deal. What's your position?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of get. Yeah, there's part of me that goes, look, you're Jamie Vardy. You're 29. You've had a brilliant season at Leicester. With all due respect to Leicester and credit to them for what they did, but this is a chance to join Arsenal, and it's probably not a chance that if you decide to stay at Leicester next season, no big Champions League club is going to come in and spend money on you because you're 30 years of age. So I, you know, for me, maybe he's not the smartest guy in the world, but I don't think he's necessarily stupid. So I'm sort of with you in the sense that I think it's going to go through. I still think it'll probably go through. Quite why the decision wasn't made by now or in that week, I don't know. Maybe he felt just a little bit pressured, put under a bit of pressure because of the way the story came out. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's got to, do I have to do this before I'm going off on the European Championships first time at a major tournament with England? Doesn't want to be accused of being a distraction or anything like that. So I think it will probably go ahead. I know you mentioned, you know, last week about clauses in the Leicester contracts being quite complicated.
Yeah.
You wonder if that's part and parcel of it as well.
Yeah.
There was a story, wasn't there, about Leicester bidding for, was it Troy Deeney?
Troy Deeney and Watford,
yeah,
in turn bidding for Berahino, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so it seems there's probably stuff going on. So it all becomes part of a merry-go-round to a certain extent.
I do wonder as well with Leicester, is there a slight sense of no one necessarily wanting to be the first to jump ship? You know,
yeah.
Kante's got this release clause and heavily linked with likes of PSG, Chelsea, even Arsenal. Arsene Wenger very complimentary about him. Although I have to say, having signed Xhaka, I'd be very surprised if there was anything to that.
Yeah.
And Riyad Mahrez, I think, was quoted yesterday saying, oh, maybe I'll stay, maybe I'll go, we'll see. One does get the feeling that it could be a bit of a domino effect.
Yeah.
How do you feel about... So your gut still says that it will go through, but what do you feel about it as a signing with a week's perspective? Do you still feel... positive about it? Do you feel concerned about it? What's your feeling there?
Yeah, I mean, I still hold true what I said last week. You know, I have reservations about it because of his age and because of the fact that this was a, you know, not that he's a one season wonder, but because it's the only season he's really scored with any regularity in the Premier League. And there is part of me that does worry about it being, you know, a guy in a purple patch and maybe not one that he can continue. But I think we spoke last week, didn't we, about how Arsene Wenger was probably going to base his decision more than just on one season. So, yeah, maybe there's you know, more to it than we know. It is something different. It is something unusual. It is a change of tack from Arsene Wenger, and those were things that were exciting and promising from last week. So, yeah, I haven't changed my mind on it significantly. And again, I'll come back to the prices being quoted for other strikers. I think it's because we want to invest throughout the squad, and I think he sees Vardy as a good, relatively short-term option, a player that could do a, you know, a good job for a couple of seasons, maybe have a third season where he contributes, and a new man or whoever comes along at that point, or who might be in charge at that point, can deal with that striking issue down the line. But yeah, I haven't really changed my mind on it a great deal. I'm not that fussed about the weight either. You know, there's plenty of time to sort things out between now and the end of the season. So, there is an element of, like, now! I want it now! When it comes to transfers. But, you know, yeah, we've got time.
And there are no deals happening, you know, with any player involved in the Euros, that's for sure. So you've just got to kind of sit that out.
Yeah, even Zlatan was refused permission to go and travel to Manchester, apparently. Even Zlatan.
Even Zlatan.
Yeah.
So there we have it.
All right. Okay. Well, that'll take us to the end of part one, I think. So we'll take a short break, come back with some of your questions in part two after this.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is the part of the show where we answer the questions that you send to us on Twitter at arsblog and at gunnerblog. The drilling? There's no drilling.
There is no drilling, but there may be drilling.
Yes.
Who knows? There's some drilling happening outside. It's nothing to do with me, guys, I assure you. I don't even own a drill.
Yeah, I have a drill, but I'm really crap at DIY. I'm really, really terrible at DIY.
To be fair, I don't know if you've got this sort of drill. This is the sort of pneumatic going through tarmac drill.
No, I don't have one of those. I've got like a Black & Decker for putting up mirrors and hanging pictures and that kind of shit.
Yeah. I know the vibe.
Yeah.
But good luck getting through a road with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I have no real need to drill into a road.
True.
All right. Lucky
in that case.
Okay. Well, look, we're going to do some questions. We're sort of short on questions, I think, really.
No one trusts us anymore after the Jamie Vardy debacle.
Yeah, this is it. People are
we've lost their faith.
Yeah, exactly. There's not much going on in the world of Arsenal, you see. So there really isn't very much going on.
Deathly quiet.
In the world of Arsenal. But look, I'm going to start with this one. From Gunnar Punner, at Gunnar Punner, and he says, should Arsene Wenger take a page out of Yogi Love's book even, and be more prepared to make tactical adjustments during the game?
Yes, that was a curious, well, not curious at all. I mean, you know.
It was really weird.
Well, he's only human. I mean, you know, I can understand, you know, if he was uncomfortable seeking to... I assume everyone knows what we're talking about here, right? I mean, shall we attempt to set the scene? Or?
Yeah, you set the scene there.
I'll set the scene. So I actually didn't see this live, but there's a clip doing the rounds on the internet of Yogi Löw, the Germany coach, readjusting during the course of the game.
Basically, caught he goes hands down his pants.
Hands down his pants. Just, you know, make check in. Do always check, guys. Check for lumps. Get sensible. Maybe not in front of the eyes of the camera, but, you know, take no risks. And he does that, job complete, and returns to his seat. But it's what transpires then that I think's most troubling, embarrassing.
Yeah, he sort of takes the hand that was checking for lumps and then brings it to his face and sort of smears it on his face, and I don't know if he's having a sniff or a taste or whatever it is.
It looks to me like a sniff.
Do you think there might have been just a little bit of, you know, behind the hand, like taste? A little tongue sticking out like a small lizard?
Oh, God. I hope not. He is a man who has the haircut of a deviant, that's for sure.
Mm.
He
like the bowler.
Yeah, I imagine... he's the sort of man who I imagine has a sort of sex dungeon in his house, yeah.
What's wrong with that, though? I mean, there's nothing wrong, per se, with having a sex dungeon, if that's what you're into.
No, there's nothing wrong with that at all. But he just... I don't know how to describe it. There's a side to yoga. Now, whether or not that correlates with him sniffing or tasting his hand after this... I mean, maybe he's just concerned. Maybe he's got a developing medical condition and he's just checking on the status of it. Mm. I don't know.
Let me ask you this question. Here's a question.
Oh, God. What's this question going to be?
Oh, well, look. Let's say you have an itch on your arm. Yeah. What do you do?
Scratch it.
Right. Got an itch on your head. What do you do?
Scratch it.
All right. Got an itch on your leg. What do you do?
Scratch it.
All right. It doesn't matter if anyone sees you scratching your leg or your arm or your head because you've got an itch there and the natural thing to do is scratch it. Correct. So what if you have like an itch on your bum or you have an itch, you know, sort of in the groinal, you know, the moist area of the groin? Why is there a stigma about scratching that particular area? You're not doing it for pleasure. Probably. You're doing it because it's itchy. And you should be allowed to scratch your itch wherever it is. That's what I'm saying.
So far, I'm with you.
Yeah.
But if you scratch your itch on your arm,
mm-hmm.
are you then smelling and tasting that scratch?
No. No, that's the key difference here, isn't it?
That's where the line is.
Yeah.
That's where Yogi's line ought to have been.
Yeah, the Yogi line.
It's quite impressive. I mean, I think even if I was a football manager, even if I was engrossed in the game... I think I'd still feel self-conscious about being in front of A, 60,000 people, and B, the world's cameras. But he clearly just wasn't bothered.
Yeah, didn't give a shit, did he? It was like hands straight down there, had a good rummage around, sat back down, maybe picked his nose. There's some suggestion he might also have picked his nose.
Fair play to him.
Maybe he's just not giving a fuck. He's crossed the Yogi line into the low country now. He doesn't care.
This is a man who has been linked, with the Arsenal job at some point in the future. How does this make you feel? Does this make you feel like he's a better or worse candidate? Any impact on your decision there?
Well, I kind of admire it. I admire that willingness to just not give a shit.
Mm.
Put his hands down his pants, had a good sniff, perhaps a taste. Does it, you know, what's wrong with that? Apart from it's quite wrong, but apart from that, what's wrong with it?
I mean, I chew my nails and stuff. You know?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a nail biter. I sometimes eat the skin around my fingers as well. So I'm a self-cannibal.
Exactly. Yeah. So maybe...
We all have our things.
I mean, Andrew Allen of Arseblog News fame asks, would you think more or less of Arsene Wenger if he took to sniffing his balls on the touchline?
I would think less of Arsene Wenger.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But only because, and I'm not saying I've thought about this in any significant way, I just imagine that Arsene Wenger's balls are probably, you know, they're well looked after in the sense that they, you know, he would go out before a game, meticulous preparation. He'd make sure that, you know, use a bit of talc, powder them up a bit so they don't get sweaty and itchy during a game. That's your commitment to your team, to your focus, the 90 minutes. You don't want to be distracted by your balls. Nobody wants that. So I would think, after 20 years of Arsene Wenger never having checked his balls, for him to go out and start like playing with them during a game.
Willy-nilly,
exactly. Yeah.
That would be a game. That would throw you.
I mean, that would be basically it for me and Arsene Wenger. That would be the end of it.
Everyone's got their line, haven't they? Everyone's got their point where the straw will break the camel's back, and that will be yours.
So yeah, from an Arsene Wenger point of view, yes. But you know, I don't know about Yogi Love as an Arsenal manager. Who did he manage before Germany? Because I can only picture him as the manager of Germany, like not a club manager.
I don't know. I think he was Klinsmann's assistant, certainly during his reign.
Right.
Teams managed. Yeah, I mean, it's not a It's not a storied list. So it's Stuttgart, Fenerbahce, Karlsruhe, Adanaspor, FC Tirol, Austria Vienna. And he went from Austria Vienna to Germany as assistant and
right.
took over.
Okay.
So there you go. So it's not exactly laced with top clubs.
No.
And the likes of Fenerbahce, he was only there for one season.
Right.
Stuttgart only 2 years. So, yeah.
Okay.
There we go.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think it felt more probable when we had a stronger German contingent. Do you know what I mean? And
yeah.
I feel like that's dissipated slightly now.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have some more German speakers in, though. You never know. You never know. Absurdist, by the way, at Yo-Yo-E, he said, has world football reached a new low?
Hey.
Boom.
Very nice. Do we have another question?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Okay, well, Sweden are playing today. Alexander Blom, who's at Nicky Northman, asks, who's the best Swede in Arsenal history? Freddie, Limpar, Schwartz, or anyone else?
Seb Larsson.
Seb Larsson.
I have to say...
Look, he takes a lovely set piece. I wish he was taking England's corners.
Yeah. it's got to be Limpar. I love Freddie, but there was just something so exciting about Anders Limpar, wasn't there? Just so exciting.
Do you know what? He's slightly just about too early for me to really remember Limpar
right.
as a top player.
Right.
I remember him at Everton more. I didn't really remember him at Arsenal.
Well, here's a tale of heartbreak for you, James, right? Here's a tale. This was in the days before the internet. Before the internet was even a thing.
Hmm.
We're talking, I think, probably 1994. So it was probably a thing. But it was called the ARPANET, or it was like one of those.
Yeah,
it was in its early stages.
Rudimentary.
Yeah, there was no WWW. We didn't have any way of finding out information except from like newspapers and the radio and television. It was bizarre and strange and slightly comforting when I think about it now.
It sounds awful.
Anyway, at the time, I was working for a pirate radio station in Dublin called KISS FM.
Lovely.
I used to do the breakfast show. From 7 in the morning until 10. And I get up every morning, cycle down to the studio, which is not far from where I live right now, and we would play hot hits, top 40, chart music, and we'd have some fun on the radio. I remember the big tune that summer was Wigfield, Saturday Night.
Of course.
Just going to throw in a clip of it here, just to remind people, and also, so it's stuck in their heads for the rest of the day. You're welcome. Anyway... we would get the newspapers. So I go into the shop next door. Some top quality drilling going on there. But anyway.
Yeah. Just adding a little bit of subtle ambience to the story. A bit of background atmosphere.
Yeah. I could be mixing things up here. But anyway, I remember going to the shop one morning and getting the newspaper. So you get like the tabloids. So you could find, you know, the funny bits that you could talk about on the radio. About, you know.
Sure. I remember the radio.
I remember that.
I know how it works.
People, you know, man 38 puts goldfish up his bum and then goes to, you know, hospital. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
And you'd make some goldfish related jokes and probably some jokes about bums. Because
I get it. It's quite similar to a podcast, really.
Yes, it is. looking at the paper one morning, and I turn over the paper to the back page of the newspaper, and I look, James, and I see a picture that to this day it haunts me. To this very day,
really,
there, standing, holding an Everton shirt. Is Anders Limpar. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? Well, I mean, hang on. This, as we recall, is pre-internet day. So there was nobody ITK.
There was no chatter about it. No whispers.
No, not as far as, well, certainly not when you lived in Dublin, maybe.
Yeah.
Around the Holloway Road, perhaps. There might have been the odd tale.
Caledonian Road. Exactly.
That could have been a wash with Limpar to Everton talk, but no, in Dublin, no. And I turned over and there, it was the back page of the Sun or the back page of the Mirror, it's Anders Limpar wearing an Everton shirt. And I was just so depressed.
You just instantly vomited all over the newspaper in shock.
I was like, ugh, this is terrible. What the fuck are you doing? Anders Limpar. And what? Why? He's brilliant. He's really good. He's fast. Look, I know he doesn't tackle and track back as much as you might like George Graham, but he's really, you know, good at football and at running fast and scoring goals and, you know, being exciting and good. And I liked him. I loved him. And then he was... And then he was gone.
He was snatched away from
me. Taken from us. So I still have this soft spot for Anders Limpar. So for me, as much as I love Freddie, and I do love Freddie, and obviously because of Arsblog, it's fucking excellent. That was a Freddie thing. Mm-hmm. I owe Freddie a lot. If he's listening, Freddie, you name it, I'm there for you, man. I'll do it. You know, like if you'd like a whole Black Forest Gatto, I will make one for him. I won't just go to the shop and buy it. I'll make him a Black Forest Gatto for the It's Fucking Excellent thing. But for me,
I can't make him one, but I'll buy him one.
That's reasonable.
Thanks.
I'm not saying
I'll buy it from you and then everyone's one.
Well, I'm not saying my Black Forest Gatto would be any good. I've never made one. But
you would.
I would try. I'd really try very hard. I'd put a lot of effort into it. I get like really good eggs. For the spongy bit, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't just get like...
Eagle eggs.
Yeah. But yeah, no, for me, Anders Limpar. What about you?
Well, for the reason I outlined that I don't necessarily remember Limpar as an Arsenal player that well, I would have to say Freddie, because I adored him, you know. He had red hair. I couldn't believe it.
Mm.
Extraordinary decision. But he was a gutsy player and a charismatic player. And, you know, we lost Ian Wright and, you know, a couple of years later, Freddie came along and had that number 8 shirt and, to be honest, had some of those similar characteristics on the field, you know, that knack for goals, that exuberant personality, and he kind of filled the void for me.
So,
I'd go with Freddie.
Oh, I love Freddie too.
Sorry, Sebastian Larsson and Stefan Schwartz and all the other Swedes who I can't remember.
Yeah.
Rami Shaban.
Yeah, God, poor Rami. Poor old Rami. He was a Swegyptian, wasn't he?
Swegyptian,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I guess Mohamed Elneny's kind of a Swegyptian, you know, because he was in Switzerland, wasn't he? He's our second Swegyptian player.
Swegyptian. Is there a difference between a Swegyptian and a Swegyptian? That's
yeah,
the thing.
It's like Juru and Giroud. We need to nail down the pronunciation on that one.
Yes. All right. We're looking for another question, aren't we?
We are looking for one.
David McNamara at DVDMCN. He says, do you reckon Vardy being benched on Saturday might make him think he needs to be playing for a big club to start for #England? And it's got the England emoji, which is a round ball with a red cross on it.
The roundest ball ever. Yeah. With the reddest cross ever on it.
Yeah.
I actually did wonder about that, you know. I mean, I think obviously the reasons he's been left out are strategic. I don't think there's any suggestion that the transfer saga has impacted upon Hodgson's thinking.
Mm.
But I do wonder if that might play into his thoughts. You know, he must feel a little bit unlucky to not be starting. And I do wonder if he thinks, well, if I was playing for a Champions League club, like, say, Raheem Sterling, who's been, frankly, rubbish all season, would things be different?
Well, if he was playing for Tottenham, he'd definitely be starting.
Yeah,
because that's pretty much
true.
All you need to play for England is just be a Tottenham player.
Imagine being an English Tottenham player who's not in the squad. How bad must you be?
Who are there? Are there any?
Ryan Mason, I guess.
Right, okay, yeah.
That's the kind of level.
Well, he can't fucking... Nah, even, he can't complain.
No, so there we go. I don't know. I think that might be a factor. I mean, definitely if he wants to keep his international place. Unfortunately, you know, history suggests that if you join a big club, your chances of doing that are significantly better. The only thing that I think is a bit of a shame is that there aren't more Arsenal players in the squad, you know, for it to hang out with him. It's kind of quite an Arsenal bereft squad. Only Jack Wilshere there.
But in fairness, do you not think that like Wilshere and Vardy,
they're an obvious pairing, aren't they?
They are.
Soulmates.
Yeah, I mean, like Wilshere's just selling him nightclub antics, scraps. Yeah. We could go hide.
They broke out of the hotel, didn't they, to join in the ruckus in Marseille, I suspect.
We can go hide in bins together, Jamie. Come on, you'll love it. It'll be brilliant.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure Jack's doing you know, the Lord's work on it. Mm. What do you reckon? Do you think it will have any impact on his international fortunes?
Maybe. Depends if he gets on, you know, in the next couple of games. I was sort of surprised, certainly against Russia. I was sort of surprised that after going 1-0 up, he didn't really have a go. Like, put on another striker.
Yeah.
And have another go.
Sterling was pretty bad as well.
He was Walcottian in his badness. Yeah.
He was. I mean, it was like watching Aaron Lennon.
It was like watching Aaron Lennon's love child with Andros Townsend.
Oof, dear.
Mm.
But yeah, so I think Vardy, I mean, to be honest, I was even thinking maybe bring Vardy on for Kane, because Kane had sort of drifted in and out of the game. And I just thought that pace on the break, as Russia were forced to come out, would have given England something, you know. But
yeah,
Hodgson was a little bit conservative, I thought, with his subs.
Mm. All right.
Question?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
What have I got in my pot? Okay, this one comes from Stanley Rudkin.
I like that name.
At Stanley Rudkin. I like his name as well.
Yeah, he sounds like a character from a 1930s book.
And his bio, Twitter bio, says, "Every silver lining belongs to a cloud."
Oh, that's quite
poetic.
Quite
depressing, really. and he asks, if you had to, right?
I don't like these
ones. Yeah, strong start. Wow. No, it's not that bad. If you had to put Gunnosaurus in the Arsenal starting 11, what position would you play him?
Well, I wouldn't put him in goal because I've seen him at halftime and there are like...
Against children.
Children, like three-year-olds who kick the ball and his reaction times are frankly embarrassing. Just absolutely embarrassing.
Okay.
So he wouldn't go in goal. I'm just trying to think of that thing. You know, when if you're playing football and you've got one guy who's like really, really bad.
Yeah, I mean, I am that guy. So, yeah, carry on.
And you go, where can we play him where he causes the least hassle?
Left back. That's where I played.
I think up front.
I know what you mean.
He's further away. He doesn't get involved. He could be quite a good decoy as well.
Do you mean the Sonogo effect?
maybe.
That's kind of what we did against Hull in the FA Cup final. It's like, you know, we don't know what he does, but he might cause chaos.
Yeah, just get him on there and run around. So, yeah, I think keep him as far away from the action.
He's not mobile, Gunnosaurus. Don't know if you've ever seen him sprint, but I mean...
He has a tendency to fall over his own feet.
He'll make Giroud look sprightly, I suspect.
Yeah. No, I still think up front. I mean, you can't play him on the wings because people would just go past him. He's got no pace to do anything. Central midfield, I mean, could he be like the Mauro Silva of Arsenal? I don't know if you remember him. I think it was Mauro Silva. He used to play for Deportivo La Coruña.
Deportivo, lovely team, yeah.
He was brilliant. I mean, he was about 46, I think.
Yeah.
And all he did was just sort of operate in a semicircle just ahead of his back four, and he would just tackle and pass and move and get the ball back. And he was great. So maybe he could be our Mauro Silva.
Okay, that's an option. I think number nine. I think, you know, there's a vacancy in the squad for a number nine.
Yeah.
I think it would distract defenders enough. I mean, he's certainly got height to him, hasn't he? Gunnosaurus must be well over 6 foot tall.
Mm. Yeah.
Is there a threat of set pieces?
Sure. But he wouldn't be good at free kicks. I mean, you remember Arsene Wenger spoke about Mikel Arteta having those dainty feet that were good for free kicks. And Gunnosaurus, his feet are...
ginormous.
Yeah, they are. They're Canu-esque.
They are Canu-esque. But, you know, have we unearthed the new Canu?
No.
I don't know.
No.
No.
No, we haven't.
But if we had to play him...
Yeah,
I'd be using him as a focal point at the you know, as the spearhead of the attack.
Yeah, yeah. All right, here's one from Dean at D to the C, and he says, "Rumor has it, this must be the whispers. This is the post internet chatter that we spoke about a bit earlier. Mm. Rumor has it that Liverpool are in for Theo Walcott, and he says if Vardy is a no go." Would you consider a Benteke swap?
I don't think so, actually.
Mm.
I'll tell you for why. because I'm not sure that Benteke is sufficiently different or better than Giroud right now.
Yeah.
And I think we need a striker who provides greater contrast than that. What about you?
Not in a fucking million years.
Really? No. Did you not think Benteke looked promising during his time at Villa? Because I thought he should definitely showed something then.
I remember on the day of the FA Cup final against Aston Villa, people were worried about Benteke.
Yeah.
People were talking, ooh, fucking Benteke. Ooh, Benteke is so fast and strong. And Mertesacker, you know, ooh. People were, you know. And maybe that was just the anxiousness of going into an FA Cup final, you know, the doomsday scenario stuff. But on that day, he was, like, beyond useless. He was absolutely rubbish. And, yeah, I think if we are going to move Theo Walcott on, I demand fiscal rectitude. I want money for Walcott. I don't want to swap him. I want actual money that we can then take and buy a good player with. I don't think it's right or proper for any of us to have... I won't say endured Theo Walcott for all these years, but I think after 10 years at the club, you know, we're due a little return from a financial point of view. So I wouldn't swap him for Benteke. I agree with you that he's not any better than Giroud. In fact, I think he's probably quite worse than Giroud. The odd, you know, spectacular overhead kick goal aside, you know, he doesn't even play for Liverpool. Who have Liverpool got up for? Who do Liverpool play up front? Like Daniel Sturridge,
Firmino,
who's got one.
Sturridge.
Yeah, he's got one leg. And who?
Origi. Who,
yeah. Origi, I ask you. Divock.
Divock. I like his name.
Yeah. It sounds Divock, like a Scouse insult, doesn't it? You fucking Divock. Yeah. You're a Divock.
It does a bit. And also, I think one of the advantages of signing Vardy is that he's a player who at least would be arriving kind of at the peak of his confidence. Feels like if you bought Benteke, you'd have to rehab him, you know, because he's had such a difficult time at Liverpool. And I'm not sure that's what we want to get involved
Do
with.
Do you ever wonder why football clubs don't hypnotise players into believing they're better than they actually are?
Genuinely, I do wonder about that.
Yeah.
I've never had hypnosis, but I have thought about doing it because, you know, it seems intriguing, doesn't it? I mean, have you ever been hypnotised?
No, I haven't. I wouldn't ever let anyone do it to me in case they turn me into some kind of Manchurian candidate, you know?
Yeah,
where
that is the worry.
There's like a trigger phrase and like someone will say it like 15 years down the line, I'll get a phone call and, you know, someone will just say, George Best down the phone. And that will be my cue to go. And then I'll have to go off and kill the President of the United States or something like that.
Sure, I know how it works.
So that's why I'm very... Maybe it's just my paranoia. Maybe I'm being overly cautious here. But no, I wouldn't let it be done to me. I've never needed it. You know, I know some people use it for giving up smoking, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, people who have literally no willpower. Those people use it to give up smoking. I know people get some benefit from hypnotherapy and what have you. I've got a friend who actually does it.
Oh, really? They practice it?
Yeah, look into my eyes, look into all that.
Wow.
With his watch, he's got a gold pocket watch, just waves it back and forth. But no, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't like it. And I certainly wouldn't want to do it as part of a stage show. You know those people who do it as a stage show,
oh,
and then they
God,
go up on stage
no.
and, oh, you're a chicken. And then you quack around like a chicken. No, who needs to do that? So no.
It's not very dignified, is it?
No. No. And I'm not a chicken. I'm a man. With feelings.
I'm a man, goddammit.
Have you got one more?
I haven't, actually. I'm out. I mean, we're quite low on questions today. I think everyone's distracted, aren't they, by the Euros.
Okay, we've got one more then. This one comes from David Maloney. And he says, would you rather have eyelids that go clang-a-lang-a-lang-a-lang-a-lang really loudly upon falling asleep or woo-woo-woo-woo when you wake up?
Well, definitely woo-woo-woo when I wake up.
Yeah.
Because at least I can get to sleep that way. It's in a way, that's just a built-in alarm clock
but
system.
Do you not then lock yourself into a vicious circle? Because the minute you go asleep, they go clang-a-lang-a-lang-a-lang, and then you wake yourself up, and they go woo-woo-woo. So you're just constantly making noise.
Hang on, I thought it was, I'm choosing one or the other.
True. I was just trying to complicate things.
I don't want the clang-a-lang-a-lang because then you'd never get to sleep, right?
Right.
Every time you just were drifting off and your eyes close, bang, you're awake again.
Wouldn't that get torture? Wouldn't you get used to it?
You might do, but if you're saying to me I cannot have it, but have the woo, woo, woo.
Right.
Obviously, I'm going woo, woo, woo.
Right.
I'm going to woo, because also that means when I wake up, it will sort of force me to get up, I'll be more productive. But don't worry, I can have a nap later, and then when I wake up, woo, 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 off we go again.
Yeah. It would be good. It would be like having an alarm clock in your eyes.
That's exactly what it would be.
What kind of speakers? You'd have to get something done to your eyelids. Then.
Can the people around you hear the woo, woo, woo?
I guess.
That's unfortunate, isn't it?
Or maybe it's just in your head, yeah. Maybe it's just in your head.
I think maybe it's just in your head. And everyone's like, why is he so grumpy when he wakes up? And then people have to explain, oh, it's because of the woo, woo, woo.
Yeah, his wooey eyelids.
He's got these woo, woo, woo eyes, yeah. But I would definitely choose that over the clang-a-lang-a-lang. I'm not, honestly, there's no money in the world for which I'm choosing clang-a-lang-a-lang.
Fair enough. I think it's the only obvious choice.
Great.
Yeah. So
Thanks very much for the question, though. Since it's a good one.
Yeah. All right.
Well, certainly a thinker, one to think about. I'll carry that with me the rest of the day. Next time I fall asleep, I'll be thinking about that.
Yeah. Next time you fall asleep, next time you're just about to fall asleep, actually tonight, just as you're about to fall asleep. Let me ask you a question.
Go on.
Are you do you fall asleep or do you have to consciously go to sleep?
I have to go to sleep, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Falling asleep implies it's sort of by accident.
Yeah, or you're reading a book.
On you.
Yeah, you're reading a book and your eyes get tired and then you go.
No, that doesn't happen to me ever.
I have to put my book down, turn off the light, then lie there and go, you know, go to sleep.
Try to sleep. I have to try to sleep. Yeah.
So tonight, James, as you turn off the light, turn over. Clang a lang a lang a lang a lang a lang a lang.
Oh, God.
It's just going to go through your head.
It's a curse.
Just as you're about to go to sleep, you'll be like, oh, here I go. Counting sheep. You're going to be so tired tomorrow.
I'm going to be furious.
All right. Well, happy continued Euros to you.
Yes, and to everyone, really.
Mm. And we'll unless something remarkable happens this week, from an Arsenal point of view, we'll catch you on next week's Arsecast Extra. So until then, have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.